comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing something else, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. You know, we live in a world that tells us in so many different ways every day that we don't matter. We're just a cog. A small cog in a big, big wheel, in a big machine. And, you know, that's just not the, that's not the truth. We're not a small cog in a big machine. We are individuals. As individuals, we are, we have free will, and we make a difference in the universe. Think about that. If you weren't here, it wouldn't be the same universe. You are important. One of the things that we hear a lot about these days, lots and lots about it, we're hearing a lot of people talking about, with anxiety, about December 2012. And on the one hand, you know, if this comes from allegedly Mayan prophecies and the Mayan calendar. Now, on the one hand, if that stuff is true, then maybe being anxious and worried and uptight about it would be just a natural thing, and maybe there would be no way really to avoid being all tied up about that. If that's not true, if that stuff isn't accurate, then the source of the anxiety would be the purveyors of the fiction. So which is it? Is it true? Or is it fiction? Well, that's what our guest is going to talk with us about tonight. William Warrick will join us on the other side of the upcoming break. And he has talked face to face with the Mayan elders and asked the questions about December 21st, 2012, about the Mayan calendar, about what does it all mean. And he has an answer from them. So we're going to hear from William Warrick tonight and find out what do the Mayan elders say. What did they tell him about all of this? And if it turns out that they told him, yep, it's all true, then I guess we can all go be worried. But if they told him something else, then we can go a different direction. We'll find out from William Warrick. If you're not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, you need to be. And the free weekly newsletter is called the K-Files. It's free. It truly is free. So just get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click that link that says K-Files and subscribe. Now, you have to activate your subscription. You'll get an email immediately with a link in it. You have to activate it. If you do that, then you will start getting the K-Files. If you don't do that, then you won't get the K-Files. You have to activate it. Remember that we have a members community full, and I mean chock full of great stuff. Join tonight. We'll be back. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And tonight, my guest, William Warwick IV. And he's been a guest on the show before, so you may be very familiar with him. Maybe you've heard him on other shows. You've read his book. William Warwick is a researcher. He is an author. He is a businessman, a public speaker, lots of things. And he has taken it upon himself to meet with the Mayan elders and to ask them about this 2012 thing. And so we're going to get a chance to do the same here this evening. We're going to ask him, what about 2012? So, William, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you back.
It's good to be back.
Let me ask, let me set the stage, because some people are new to our genre and may not, I may as well be speaking an extraterrestrial language to them. They don't understand. There is an ancient civilization in Mexico known as the Mayans, and the Mayans, those people still exist, but the civilization does not. But at the time when Europe was definitely in the Dark Ages, the Mayans had big cities, and they built big buildings, and for their time you could even say skyscrapers. They were extremely advanced in astronomy. They were extremely advanced in mathematics, and they constructed a calendar system that is more accurate than the calendar that we use today. And they were able to predict coming eclipses with accuracy, and to predict them thousands of years into the future. So these are not these are not knuckle draggers. These are highly, highly sophisticated people. They really did exist. Now, there has been for the past several years a thing going around, principally the internet, but also now there are books, there are DVDs, there's been a Hollywood movie about it. The story that the Mayan calendar and the Mayan prophecies regarding 2012 actually say that we are headed towards a gigantic calamity on December the 21st, 2012. It has evolved to the point of the myth or the story pretty much being that December the 21st, 2012 is the end of the world. And so a lot of people have gotten very anxious about this. Like I said, it's been made into a Hollywood movie. And there are lots of DVDs that have been put out and lots of videos on YouTube that are out there about 2012, December the 21st. It's the end. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. Now, as I said at the top of the show, if that's true, then we certainly don't want to make light of it. I don't want to make light of it anyway. But, if that's true, if that's really what's coming, then I guess being anxious about it would be a normal thing. But if it's not true, if that's not what the prophecy says, then all of that anxiety people are experiencing is the fault of the purveyors of a fiction, of a myth.
Yeah.
So I would like to know, is it true? I would like to know whether or not the Mayan elders support the myth.
Well,
we can barely hear you, so let me see if I can get your volume up a little bit here.
Yep.
Oh. All right, go ahead.
That sound better?
That's better.
The Mayan elders actually are a little perturbed that there have been so many basic lies and mis I guess you would call them politely misinterpretations of a lot of their prophecies, which actually came from the Chalam Balaams, were doubly written, you know, hundreds to maybe perhaps even thousands of years ago in some cases.
Okay, so, all right, we've got the gist of that, and we'll get into the details of it. But first, I want to get into the details of you meeting with the Mayan elders. How did this happen, and when did it happen?
This actually occurred last February, in March, for about 9 days in March. I was actually been in contact with some Native Americans for quite a while, and a couple of very close friends were part of the Aztec religious dance group, Danza Azteca Anahuaca. And my two guides had a lot of connections on Guatemala. We've known that for quite some time. And actually, it just worked out that I had a contract in the winter and was able to afford to go down there. And so finally, we pulled the trigger and kind of sort of mounted a little bit of an expedition down there. And it was pretty mind-blowing, actually, because, you know, I really didn't know exactly what we were going to go down there to do. They knew exactly what we were going to do because they'd been there before many times, but I was sort of, you know, this is the first time I'd ever been down there, so it was really as Indiana Jones as you can get for today's modern-day society. And a lot of the things that I experienced were things that not very many people get to experience, just because the people that I went with weren't, you know, tour guides. They were actually shamans and spiritual leaders themselves. Very respected in the community, even in Guatemala, for a lot of the nonprofit work they do to reclaim sacred lands. So I was really going as a privileged guest with them, you know, and was able to facilitate some of the meetings that would take place further on in the trip. So we basically started in Curagua. We started in Rabinal, which has one of the oldest Mayan temple sites in the Guatemala Highland. And we did some ceremonies up there and came down from the mountain. And we actually did a ceremony, which was for the VIPs, and then they did a dance that has been around for like 600 years. I mean, it was just incredible, one thing after another. And then after Rabinal, we went to Curagua, which is where the huge stela are, which is in the park in Curagua. That's where the actual end date that everyone, all the writers of 2012 Doomsday Prophecies have keyed all of their dates from. That's where the date, one of the dates, is officially three stelas that have this actual end date that everyone's talking about, which is the 13.0000. Back to an end date. But here's the thing people need to understand about the calendar system, which is what I learned, is that first of all, we Western people think in terms of linear calendars. We think of a zero and then it just goes on to infinity. Whereas the Mayans, all of their calendars, they have at least 20 that we know of. There's a couple that are probably still so sacred, but they don't share them with outsiders, which would make around 22 or 24 calendars, depending on which tribe's calendar you go by. And the indications are from them that none of the things that we look at as being linear to them, they're all cyclical. So they have 20 different calendars, and each calendar has a different time period that they mark the calendar with. So for instance, the long cycle that we're about to end is the backspin cycle, and that takes 5,125 years roughly. To go through one complete cycle where we kind of go back to zero on that particular, what they call a calendar round. So you can imagine all these little calendar rounds going around, just like little circles inside of a watch. So when they all kind of come together in one significant, you know, event, that's what we call in our calendar December 21st, 2012, which they would call 13.0.0.0.0. And then that calendar would start all over again at one. 0.0.0.0.0.
All right, so you went to Mexico.
Yep. Well, actually Guatemala. Guatemala and Honduras.
Okay. So you're in Guatemala and Honduras. You personally have met with Mayan elders. How did you know these are the elders?
Oh, well, because from the first day that we were there in Robin, all we did was what are called sacred fire ceremonies. And at each sacred fire ceremony, there are a number of elders. So we did, I think, a grand total of 9, or maybe even 10 or 11 sacred fire ceremonies. You did 2 on one day. So at each sacred fire ceremony, there was always at least one elder. And usually there was, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 of them. And it just depended on where we were, because we went to 9 different locations to do the sacred fire ceremonies. And Quirigor, we just went and looked at the stars, and he told us the history of the Bakhtun cycles and stuff like that. And that was with Checha. And then the next day, we actually ended up, we went to Tikal. And Tikal, we did another sacred fire ceremony, and then we met some, a whole bunch of other elders. Obviously, I have a special pass in order to do the ceremony. We did a ceremony right in the middle of Tikal. So basically, we did the sacred fire ceremony, and that's basically where I was initiated. They gave me my first beads. And, you know, that was a really proud moment for me, because I've been, you know, working to help for a very long time, and it was the first time I ever really got that kind of serious recognition, so it was awesome for me, unexpected. And, you know, we did sacred fire ceremonies, and I learned, you know, by the 4th or 5th time, I learned some prayers and stuff like that, and I learned what the meaning and the intent was behind all the things that we were doing, and it was really, really intense. You know, it was a really powerful, you know, moving moment for me. And then the next day is when we met Dawn, Alejandro, who is the Wandering Wolf, who is the leader of the Tichi Maya. And he was with a whole bunch of other, actually, dignitaries. There was actually some South American, I believe they were Incan, emissaries that were there who had traveled to be at this Dawn Sunrise ceremony on March 21st in Waxatun. And Waxatun, the pyramids have been set up so that the thousands of years, well, I don't know exactly how long, but for at least a couple thousand years, I believe, 2,500 years or so, these two pyramids were set up so the sun comes up over one pyramid. You can see it coming, it looks like it's rising through the pyramid itself from the other pyramid. And so that was when Don Alejandro did a speech. We actually have on YouTube right now, I think it's the only version or copy of it, where he talks to us about, you know, what's going on in the world, and contamination and stuff like that, to finish. I guess I'll be able to subtitle, but essentially what he says is that, and what any of the Mayans will tell you, is that their calendars are very active. The problem is they don't know when the calendar started exactly. So what that means is that the end date cycle, when they believe that all these things could take place, they don't know when it's going to happen. It could happen December 21st, 2012. It could happen 50 years after that date.
Now, wait a minute. He said their calendars are not very accurate, and yet...
No. Well, they're very precise. They know the cycles of Venus, and they know the cycles of the eclipses and stuff like that. What I'm saying is they don't know the exact beginning date of the calendar out. In other words, the reason why we know it's 2012 is because someone said, you know, 0 or 3 BC or however you want to look at it, as the 0 date, right?
Okay.
They don't know when their beginning date is. Scientists estimate that it's August, 31st or August 11th, 0015 BC. Or I forget the exact date. But the bottom line is they don't know exactly when the beginning of the calendar started, when they're supposed to start the calendar round, the long clock date. Does that make sense?
Yes, but if they can look at the calendar and see when it zeroes out, then they can calculate back.
They can't. They don't know the end. What they do know is that we're in the period of time. This is the specific about this. This is why the prophecies are sort of true and they're sort of not true. And this is why it's very important to understand. This is why we're talking about it tonight. Because exactly, it's beyond prophecy. Put it that way, and you'll see it in a second here. But basically what they're saying is that we're going to go in a period of darkness of 3 days. That's actually 60 to 70 hours is what they said. And the question then becomes, what is the initiator of this 60 to 70 hours of darkness? That was the first question that came into my mind. The second question was, where have I heard this before? And, of course, you mind if you're a Christian automatically goes to the biblical 3 days of darkness, right?
Sure.
So the question then becomes, okay, are we looking at two parallel stories here? Because if we look at the book of Revelation, where they don't even really know where it came from, supposedly from John from Patmos, but nobody knows where John from Patmos is, right? What if it was actually, instead of being a book of Revelation, which is a prophecy about the future, what if it's actually describing events that happened in the past? Now, this actually falls in line with what the Mayans were sort of trying to tell us, or if I read between the lines of what they were trying to tell, me when we were there, is that we're about to enter a period or a cycle where we line up the Earth and the Sun and the galactic center, the Dark Rift, which they call Ixabama. Interestingly enough, they also call it the Dark Rift. And they knew exactly where it was. So they described the property of the supermassive black hole before anyone could ever know what the properties of the supermassive black hole was, and they told you, and they pretty much figured out where it was, too, which is just, it's beyond, you either have to accept that there was a super civilization that existed long before the ones that we have today, and they got their knowledge from there, or they'll tell you they got this information from the Pleiadians. From beings from the Pleiades, which is what they tell you. They will tell you flat out, it's not a big secret. There's YouTube interviews with Don Jalandro or that. So to understand, if we just accept it at face value and just say, okay, we don't really have another explanation as to where they got this super science from. If they somehow had some interaction with some extraterrestrials who had this knowledge, then that would certainly explain where it came from. And I think that's exactly what happened.
I'm still a little bit confused here, because if they know when this Bakhtin cycle zeroes out to start over, then they can simply wind it backwards to find the date it started.
But again, they don't know when, you can't know what the end date is unless you know the exact start date. So the dates that have been thrown out there are estimates by Western scholars.
So yeah, but this Mayan calendar, the great Bakhtin calendar, it can visibly wind down to zero. I mean, they can look at it and see when it hits zero.
They did have the concept of zero.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll be back with that discussion and more right after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, also known as the world's hottest talk show host.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, and this is Kevin Smith, and we're talking this evening with William Warrick IV. And what we're talking about is this Mayan prophecy that we've all heard about. And, is it really a Mayan prophecy? Or have we been hearing fiction? So, William, as we went away for break, I was bringing up the thing about, if you know how long it is until you zero out the Bakhtin calendar. For instance, if it's 62 days and it zeroes out. If that's the case, then you should be able to count backwards from there to find out what was the beginning date.
Yeah, they've done that. Western researchers have done that.
Okay.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right date.
Because they may actually be thinking it zeroes out on a date that's not accurate.
Exactly.
Got it.
It's an estimate.
Got it. It's an estimate.
It's an estimate.
Okay, so the Mayan elders...
You see, just to be clear, just so everyone understands, what happened was when the Central America and the Americas got invaded by the Spanish conquistadors, they basically, through, you know, whether they intended to or not, they committed genocide on the population just the way they...
Oh, they intended to. They intended to. That was their M.O.
Yeah, and so they lost a lot of the things that a lot of the priests and the elders, they really had to go underground because they were assassinated, and they were underground really only until recently. When I say recently, I mean for 500 years, only up until maybe the late 1990s, maybe, when Guatemala, the town that I went in for instance, Rabinal, there was a massacre that was committed there. There were anywhere from 1,500 to 3,000 people that were massacred in that town in, I think, 1980. And it was unbelievable. And I didn't learn about it until after I had left. I had suspected that something had happened there, but I wasn't really sure. And then when I got home, I did more research on it. I just couldn't believe what had happened there. And it explained a lot of the reasons why I felt the way that I felt when I was there and the way that people reacted and all kinds of other things. So they had to actually work with the Western people, and you got to remember that the Mayan glyphs weren't really deciphered until the mid-80s, when that brilliant guy who got was the Fulbright scholarship from Massachusetts, I believe, with MIT.
I forget his name, but I know who you're talking about, and he's been working on that since he was a kid.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, thought it was cool to try and decipher, you know, ancient Mayan glyphs. Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it, actually. And there's only maybe him, and I think it's Linda Schell. I mean, there's probably only, you know, I mean, there's only a handful of people in the world that really are truly experts in this stuff. And there's more than one way to interpret a lot of these glyphs, too. So they don't have the full, you know, grasp of all. And I saw this when I went down there because I had a conversation with a German guy who was an archaeologist, been there for probably 40 years. He had a kid that lived there with him and stuff. And, you know, it's funny, you have these sort of pigeonholed positions down there where you've got the Indiana Jones archaeologist who's pulling the company line, and then you've got, you know, the standard line that all the archaeologists fall into with everything, and then you've got the Mayan shamans who probably know more than all of them combined, you know, and if you just ask them, they'll tell you, kind of deal. And then you've got the religious Roman Catholic zealots that, you know, want to convert you and they tell you you're either going to go to hell or go to heaven and all that. So, you know, it's really, it's like an Indiana Jones novel in a sense because, you know, you're put into that whole mix down there to try and figure out what's really going on, what's the story behind the story. And the story behind the story is that there are different, the Chilam Balams wrote all kinds of different prophecies. There's no one prophecy that says the world's going to come to an end on the 13th Bach to an end date. It's not like that.
Who wrote all different kinds of prophecies? Chalapa who?
They're called Chilam Balams.
Chilam Balam. Okay, yeah, I misunderstood you. That's a term I'm familiar with.
Yeah, and so what they were was they were kind of like the local priests.
Yeah.
They were the local day keepers. So there were about 20, well, today there are about 24 different tribes of Mayans, actually, that are still here. There's 5 million Mayans spread all around Central America and Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras and Belize and Yucatan. So they're still here. They're very much still here, very, very much still alive. And they do have some and a lot of the traditions that that they had since the beginning of time, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have the reconnection to all of the data. And how do I explain that? I'll give you an example. Like, there was an interview that was done between one of the Inca leaders and Don Alejandro, who was the leader of the Mayans. And they two themselves were talking about, hey, you know, we have this god who's called, they have the names, I can't even pronounce them. And then he would say, but you have this god who's Pachacucha, no disrespect to anyone, I'm totally messing up their names because they're so difficult to pronounce. But they're basically saying, hey, let's compare notes because I think we're talking about the same guy. And we have the prophecy of the eagle and you have the prophecy of the condor And there was this prophecy that the eagle and the condor, and the eagle represented North American natives, and the condor represented South American natives, were supposed to get together at this time, during this time period, to reveal all these different things that the, like what I'm talking about right now, which is the 3 days of darkness, to the general public. Now here's the thing. So the calendar that we have today that everyone that's been pushed down our throats is that the world supposedly is going to come to end at the 13.000 end cycle, which may or may not be true. And let me explain that. The way the Mayans see it is that they understand that the last time that we were in this calendar cycle, and what that means is roughly 5,125 years ago, we, and I would assume that this is cyclical, right? So every multiple of 5,000 years, right?
Okay.
We apparently go through 60 to 70 hours of darkness. Now, you have to think about this for a second, because the first thing I thought of, because, you know, my business deals with some high-tech stuff and some NASA applications and stuff like that, so I'm always thinking about space. And one of the applications, one of the things that I thought of when you take away sunlight for 3 days is you take away all the heat. There's 64,000 terawatts of energy, sunlight energy, infrared energy, that hit the Earth every 24 hours. That's an unbelievable amount of electricity, amount of heat, amount of energy. There's 16 terawatts is what it takes to power the whole world grid. So you're getting hit with thousands and thousands and thousands of times more energy than that in a 24-hour period. So the idea that I started thinking of, I was like, all right, and I'll tell you why this connects into something we didn't actually get a chance to talk about. This connects with the third secret of Fatima, or at least a version that I was given. And in the third secret of Fatima, it was told to me that what's actually going to happen is that we're going to have a night where the whole Earth is going to be colder than it's ever really been before, than anyone can ever remember. And that this is going to cause a huge sort of, obviously, you know, tragedy, sort of. And the idea I had in my mind was that movie The Day After Tomorrow, right?
Okay.
The vision, I guess you could say, right?
The sure.
This third secret of Fatima is supposed to unfold. And by the way, this was told to me before that movie ever came out, a long time ago before that. And it's probably written even long before I received it, too, obviously, if it's truly the third secret, right? So I started thinking for a second. I said, well, what if the third secret of Fatima is talking about what's going to happen, what the Mayans are talking about, and what the Book of Revelations is talking about, which is that we'll have 3 days of darkness. 60, 70 hours is about 3 days of darkness. If the end result of that darkness, whatever the cause of that darkness is, and we'll get to that part in a second, but if the cause of that darkness, whatever the cause of that darkness is, if it causes us to lose solar energy input for 60 or 70 hours, what would be the net effect of that? Well, the net effect of that would be we would lose somewhere around 40 degrees a day. So by the third day, no matter where you were, or even if you're at the equator, you'd be looking at something like negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that sounds crazy, except for one key important fact that you probably already know, and you're probably already thinking about this right now in your head, and that's that we've found animals, mammoths and other animals, saber-toothed tigers from the last ice age, that were apparently piled up into these huge piles and killed or frozen instantly. So the question then becomes, could this be the mechanism by which those things happen? In other words, a huge, for whatever causes the loss of the solar energy, right, for the short period of time, causes this huge instantaneous deep freeze. So then I started thinking, I said, okay, all right, we've gotten this far with the theory. So what is the mechanism that's causing this? And then, of course, it would be an interaction between the sun and our solar system and the dark rift, the energy that's coming from the supermassive black hole, right?
Well, it could be, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, like, one of the funny things about solar science is, you know, we know a lot about it, but we don't understand that much. You know, we can tell you where the solar prominences are. We can do it in ultraviolet. We can do it in this spectrum and that spectrum. But we don't necessarily understand the physics behind it. We're still sort of reaching and sort of trying to come up with the new physics that explains everything that we're seeing. I'll give you a perfect example of this, and that's sunspot activity. goes in an 11-year cycle. That's been known for hundreds of years that the sunspot activity goes in 11-year cycles. What hasn't been really known or figured out or dawned on a lot of cosmologists and researchers is what is actually causing that. And they seem to think that it's something within the sun, but it's so ridiculous to say that because it's too regular and too recurring. And it would indicate that there is an outside influence, and that outside influence, of course, is the influence that the sun is affected by the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy.
Well, maybe.
Well, if let's think about this for a second. If we're affected by the sun, what happens when the sun affects us directly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're stuck in the sun's gravity well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole sun and our solar system, in turn, are directly connected to the supermassive black hole because we rotate around it just the same way that the Earth rotates around the sun. So if the sun hiccups, or if the sun has a solar flare prominence, or the sun has some sort of, 5% energy increase due to whatever,
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be, that affects us directly. We can see that.
Yeah.
See it today, the X flares, we see it today. There was a huge one in the spring that increased, dumped enough infrared energy into the upper atmosphere of North America that we have the biggest heat wave we've ever had. And that hasn't been talked about, but that's what happened in March, in the beginning of March.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that if the supermassive black hole, whatever's going on around that, say an interstellar dust cloud, collides or gets sucked into the supermassive black hole, and that releases dark energy forces that, of course, we can't see, but they affect us, right, because it makes up, 60% of matter, they'd say now, right? But they don't know what it is, and they can't describe it or anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you just look at the idea that we are directly connected to the supermassive black hole, which they call the Dirac Rift or Ixobaba, and that we would our sun would be affected by super magnetic, energetic, you can call them particles, you can call them magnetic waves, whatever you want to call it, it's just a super magnetic energy, which would come spiraling out from the supermassive black hole. And that supermagnetic energy would probably be so dense and so powerful that it would be condensed into a very thin imaginary disk. Now, we pass through that disk every 5,125 years or so. Again, they don't know the exact date. They just know that we're coming up on that time period again.
All right, we have to step away for break. We will pick up right there when we come back and find out what do the elders say is coming. We'll be back right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, William Warwick IV. All right, so William, we understand that you're saying that as the sun passes through this field of energy coming from the center of our galaxy, the sun is going to be affected.
Yeah.
Okay, and so we're going to have three days of darkness.
16 to 70 hours is what they said.
Okay. And then what?
They're not real specific about that. They did say that they would be safe because of their sacred fire ceremonies. Or they just said their sacred fires would be burning. And, it was a funny thing because I did nine of these sacred fire ceremonies. And, without totally understanding what they were about until he said that part. And I thought to myself, okay, wait a second. Maybe they knew that there's going to be 60 to 70 hours of darkness. Maybe that was recorded in their whatever, their records, right? But maybe they didn't know exactly what caused it. Maybe they were able to record, the astronomers were able to record, like, the last date that they had, which would show that we were in this position where we are now, which is where the Earth, the Sun, and the supermassive black hole are all basically lined up in one line, right?
Okay.
So I think they were able, I think they had the record of some of the events, like the 60, 70 hours of darkness, but I don't think that they realized, or the story was passed down about what happened after that. Do you know what I'm saying?
So then I'm curious.
The beginning and the ending of stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we got. I think we got, they remembered the beginning, which was the 60 to 70 hours of darkness, and they remembered that they would be safe with their sacred fires.
Okay, so I'm curious, though, their reaction to all of these published stories about the prophecy, the Mayan prophecy, their reaction is basically it's BS.
Yeah.
But how can they say that if they don't know what's coming?
Well, to be specific, what they say is you should stop scaring our people. Because their own people are coming to them and saying, you know, what's this all about? You know, why are they saying the world's going to end on the end of the 13th Bakhtung cycle? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's up with that, right?
Now, okay, well, here's one thing that we can hang our hats on collectively, and that is, according to them, this has happened before. We are just going through this cycle once again.
Yep.
They survived it before.
Yep.
They will survive it this time.
Absolutely. Now you know why they built their fortresses in Machu Picchu up so high, in Teotihuacan, you know, 10,000, 13,000 feet up. If you look at all the old flood stories, the people that survived the floods were the people that lived in the mountains, or landed on a mountain, if you want to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they did. Because one of the first things that's going to happen, and I came up with a very precise theory for all this, and I'd love to share it with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
It involves the magnetic polarization field. And I learned this from studying gamma ray bursts, by the way. When gamma ray bursts occur, the most energetic explosions of energy in the universe that we know of, and they can release 100 million times the energy of the sun in just a couple of seconds or a couple of minutes. One of they have soft gamma ray bursts and hard gamma ray bursts and all kinds of different variations of them. And they're today believed to be, you know, the byproduct of, you know, pulsar stars that fall apart, or some theories say, you know, the end of black holes in some situations, et cetera, et cetera. I believe that some of these may be indications of faster than light travel by extraterrestrial civilizations. That's one theory that's been around for a while. I'm not the only person that espouses that. What's going to happen is that we're going to get hit or come into a super polarized magnetic field. And what that basically means is that you have a positive and negative charge that are highly twisted, like the DNA strand. Let's look at it like that. And when the whole solar system passes into this very thin disk of super polarized electromagnetic, highly gravitationally charged energy from the supermassive black hole, what's going to happen is that energy is going to go to the biggest gravity spot in the solar system, which is the sun. And what it's going to do, because it's spiraling, because it's polarized, is that positive field and that negative field are probably going to separate, and they're going to try and equalize each other by going around the sphere of the sun, so that it basically bypasses the sphere of the sun and comes out on the other side. And begins to spiral again, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And so think of it like a stream of hot and cold water that's coming from the center of the galaxy that's going to hit the sun. It's going to go around the sun, and then we're still going to have that hot and cold water. But what that hot and cold water, which is the supermagnetic gravity-charged particles, or whatever you want to call it, waves, because it's going to bend space-time, what that's going to do is it's actually going to bend space-time, so that the electromagnetic energy that's coming from the sun will be warped away from us, like a lens effect. And we know that this is true because this has been proven in experiments, the lens effect, you know, the gravitational wave lens effect. So this would explain a couple of things, like the idea of the Book of Revelations where it says it's going to seem like the stars are going to fall out of the sky, because it would be an optical illusion. It'd be like the undulating waves on a hot road during the day, which are bending the light waves.
Okay.
Except that they would be bent in such a way that not only would we lose the actual light from the sun, we would also lose the heat and the infrared energy and everything else along with it. So
then what happens as the sun begins to appear again?
Very good question. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole series. The first thing that's going to happen is that when we go out of the sun's electromagnetic solar wind, we're going to accelerate a little bit. We've already been accelerating. That's what these 3 jolts have been. These 3 big, huge earthquakes that we've had. The Earth has accelerated a little, like a quarter of a second each time. Not a quarter of a second, it's smaller than that, but I think grand total, if we add them up, I think we've accelerated a quarter of a second. Which makes sense, if my theory is true. Because we're coming closer and closer to that point where it's going to be heavier and denser and everything else.
Okay, so we accelerate, so what?
Well, we'll have some major earthquakes and crustal displacement. And then we'll have freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the 60 to 70 hours of darkness. So the first thing that we would expect in a situation like that is that everything would begin to freeze. So that by the third day, unless you were underground, or you had some sort of natural fire source, which comes back to the sacred fire ceremony. In other words, they have sacred, you know, incense balls and, you know, all this regalia and stuff that they burn in the fire ceremony. And I'm thinking, well, what if that's the way that they survived last time? They went to the caves, or they built the kiva. That's what the kivas are for. The kivas are perfect underground bunkers for surviving some kind of catastrophe like that, because you have an air opening, because you can't have a fire inside a house, you get carbon monoxide and you die, right?
Right.
So you have a little opening at the top, air comes in, smoke is allowed to go out, but you're still sort of underground. And I think that's why they built those. Because they had a memory of what happened, or that those were the survivors of what happened 5,000 years ago. And that's why they built those houses the way that they did.
Well, I don't want to make this about the Bible, but you mentioned that. You brought that up. So how does this fit with what you're saying about that it's going to be very, very cold? How does that fit with what the Bible says about this time it won't be a flood that destroys the world, it'll be fire?
Well, it depends on which, you know, prophecy in the Bible you're talking about. The Book of Revelations, I think it's Revelations 12, starts with the 3 days of darkness.
You have the three days of darkness, but then then you have the destruction of the earth by fire.
I don't think that's in there.
Trust me, it is.
Oh, are you talking about fire and brimstone?
The earth will not be destroyed by a flood, but by fire.
That may partially be in there, but that may be set off by volcanic eruptions when the Earth slips again and starts to accelerate again, which we've already seen, because if you look at the volcanoes that have erupted in Iceland just recently, you know, some of the other hot spots around the world, I mean, obviously, you know, something's going on, you know what I mean? It's you can't just blame it all on global warming, you know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. more to it than that. Global warming is only part of the problem. There are things going on that are so beyond us and beyond our ability to have any effect on that.
All right, Tom, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, William Warwick IV. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. Delighted you're here, and my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. Hope it doesn't happen to you again. It's such a sad, sad thing. So we're talking about the Mayan prophecy. William Warwick was in Mexico a few months ago and met with Mayan elders, talked with them about this whole thing about, 2012 and the Mayan prophecy, and heard from them what they say about it. And we're talking about that. Now, as we went away for break, William, I was talking about, you had brought up several examples where what the Mayans say is also mentioned in the Bible. And then I brought up something mentioned in the Bible, and my question is, so what do the Mayans say about that? Is there anything that matches up with that? Now, in two places that I know of in the Bible, it talks about the earth being destroyed by fire. One of those places is 2 Peter chapter 3, and the other one is Revelation 21. But as an example, in 2 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 12, it says, as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming, that day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat. So that's a severe fire if the elements are going to melt. That means iron is going to melt. That's a severe heat. And in Revelation it says that the destruction of the earth will not be by water, it'll be by fire. Now, there's another part of that that I will mention. However, I'm just wondering, since the 3 days of darkness are talked about both by the Mayans and by the Bible.
Yeah.
Here's something the Bible talks about. Do the Mayans also talk about it?
Obviously, because just the fact that they said 60 to 70 hours and...
No, I'm talking about the earth being destroyed by fire. The Bible talks about that. Do the Mayans also?
No, not that I'm aware of.
No. Uh-huh.
No, nothing I'm aware of. Nothing specific like in those terms.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let me unplug some of the anxiety for those of you who don't read. Maybe you read the Sunday comics, or you read the newspaper or something. But you don't read these things that we're talking about, and you should. You should read everything you can get your hands on by and about the Mayans. You should read every ancient text you can get your hands on, and that includes these ancient texts that are in the Bible, because you'll find out that almost every reason for which you toss the Bible away because it's a religious book, almost all of those reasons are man-made fictionalizations of stuff that the Bible doesn't even say. And it does say some pretty amazing things that you really should consider. And this is one of them. But let me unplug some of the anxiety. If all of this end-time stuff were to start happening tomorrow, and if the Bible prophecies are the ones that have it right, you still have 1,000 years before that destruction by fire. So there's not, whenever I say, we're going to survive this thing, in every ancient text, that talks about these sort of things happening at the end of this age.
Yeah. It's not just the Mayans, and that's just
right.
Stress.
Yeah, we survive it.
Yeah.
There will be some people.
The species.
Yeah, the species survives. There will be people who don't take seriously just the minor precautions for survival.
Yeah.
which you should do whether any of this existed or not.
Yeah, we're not prepared. The only good thing that could possibly come out of it is that maybe some people are more prepared for what's going to happen.
Well, and they should be prepared. William, I still say this. I think the significance of December the 21st is that it comes before December 22nd.
Actually, you know what it means to me is that is sort of the that's the date upon which everyone can probably agree that if we don't, as a species, you know, not even just as a country anymore, really, as a species, if we don't really come to a new sort of understanding or a new sort of cooperative agreement with each other on a one-to-one basis, you know, whether that's employer to employer, the employer to employee, or, you know, interpersonally, socially, et cetera, we just can't go on the way that we're going. The pollution, the contamination, that was one of the things that the elders talked a lot about, actually, was actually the contamination. Because, look, if you have a society that's based on free energy and solar energy and stuff like that, and it gets destroyed by natural cataclysms that are going to occur, that they know are going to occur, it's not a big deal. But if you have a nuclear power plant that has a 36-hour reserve diesel fuel, and the diesel engines get flooded in a once-in-1,000-year or 5,000-year flood, and there's 110 nuclear power plants in the United States, we're kind of in big trouble.
Well, we are. And but you know something? Bad behavior is a self-eliminating problem.
Well, we just don't want to eliminate the rest of the whole species in the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, a lot of us are going to be victims of these insane, berserk people that are in charge of things.
Yeah.
We're going to be victims of them, and there's, you know, but not all of us will. And there will be some survivors.
Funny thing.
There will be some of these berserkos that survive, and I hope those of you who are normal and survive, when you run across one of the berserkos that survive, kill him.
Well,
that way it won't happen again.
Here's the funny thing. Princess Nakamura, in February of this year,
yeah.
She's the princess of Japan.
Yep, she's been on the show.
Has she really?
Yeah.
Has she talked about this on the show with you?
Yeah. Hey, man, everybody that's anybody on this planet's been on this show.
Oh, man. So
you're somebody, you see. You made it.
I don't know. Yeah, really. No, but I don't know. I just saw her interview on about the 3 days of darkness, where she talks about, well, of course, obviously the first thing is going to be loss of electricity. I'm sorry we've been kind of glazed over that. But obviously the first thing that's going to happen with this huge electromagnetic spiraling energy from the middle of the galaxy is that we would lose our electrical grid. She says unequivocally that the rest of the world leaders, and I would assume she would know, right, have already prepared for this, have been preparing for it, and this is what they're building the bunkers for, so that they can survive, for 2, 3, 4 months, whatever the case may be, and, wait till the, dust settles, figuratively and literally, and just come back out and sort of rule the Earth. You know, the funny thing is that I just figured out something the other day, that the Eye of Ra, or the one that we see above the pyramid,
yeah,
that's actually a veiled symbol for the lens effect of the gravitational waves coming around the sun and being lensed around the Earth.
Yeah, I have read that before.
Really?
I'm not sure where, but it's on the internet that was someone speculating. It was a theory about the Eye of Ray or Ra, and yeah, I'm not sure who wrote that, but I've run into that before. But this during this 3 days, it's going to be very cold. It will take a while for the Earth to heat back up again. It won't happen instantaneously.
Not too much longer, but then that would explain the flood that would come afterwards. And then in the Bible, after the 3 days of darkness, it talks about how a third of the waters were made dark and they looked like blood. But that could just be the red tide that would occur after all those nutrients and dead animals and dead trees and everything would wash out into the ocean. And that would cause a red tide that would kill everything in the ocean. So you would see this cascade effect where if you just start with the premise that we lose all the heat energy from the sun for a couple of days, and then you just ask yourself, okay, what would happen after that? And you run like a model, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the book of Revelations, at least in that particular section, describes exactly what would happen, though the after effects.
You know,
because
on the day when the sun goes out, we won't know it for 8 minutes.
Yeah. Well, our phones would die first.
Yeah, well, it will take 8 minutes for the light to stop getting here from the sun.
Hmm.
And so for 8 minutes after the sun goes out, we will still think it's there. We'll still think the light's there.
I think what would happen first is the power grid would go down.
Maybe.
And then you'd start to see satellites fall out of the sky.
Why?
And that could be the fire of brimstone. Right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, and then
no, I don't think the satellites would necessarily fall. Why would they fall?
Well, a lot of them have to be put their orbits have to be corrected. And the other thing that's going to happen is that once the solar wind, which is basically what we're talking about, that's going to be warped and lensed or accelerated or decelerated.
Mm-hmm.
Once you change the solar wind, which is basically the drag on the satellites, then mm-hmm. they're either going to go out of orbit, out into space, or they could potentially be pushed into the Earth, you know, because you're increasing the drag. So that's the other mechanism.
Well,
see, that's the whole quotient, this thing that we're forgetting, is that there's going to be a whole bunch of things that would occur, because as soon as we come out of the solar wind, basically the Earth is going to accelerate a little bit. And we've already seen that happen a couple of times over the past couple of years, because it's getting closer and closer to this point in space where, you know, we're going to flip to the other side, so to speak. And when we go through the middle, it's basically a block wall. It's a B-L-O-L-C-H wall. It's a thing in physics. A point in between a positive and negative electromagnetic field where there's no magnetic field. Well, there's a zero, you know. I don't explain that. That's a little more in detail. But basically, that's what's going to happen.
So, I'm still curious as to why the satellites would fall.
Because you're changing the drag. When you change the drag, then you're changing their orbit. And everything right now, including the Earth, is going through the drag of the solar wind. The solar wind is exerting a force on the Earth, which is, you know, just an unbelievable amount of force. And once that solar wind is either, you know, increased or decreased by, you know, any significant amount of, you know, 10%, say, that's going to change the orbit of the Earth as well as the satellites around the Earth. Because you're changing.
Yeah, but those satellites are far enough up. I mean, most of them are far enough out there. It may disturb their orbits, but I am not too certain it's going to cause them to fall. Now, with the International Space Station, maybe, because it's not very far away.
Well, and you also have to, we'll talk into an academic discussion about space satellites falling or not falling, but the bottom line is that, you know, we've got 5,000, 10,000 objects up there right now that they're tracking, and as soon as we lose power, and they lose the ability to track those objects and change their trajectories, they're going to start hitting each other, and that, in addition to the drag, is also going to cause stuff to fall out of the sky, because eventually, you know, once it collides, stuff's going to go in all kinds of different directions. Stuff is going to go out in space. Stuff's going to come to Earth. So, I mean, these are all things that would happen in succession.
All right, so when all this is over, presumably we would have had all of this would have caused a lot of nuclear reactors to go Roman candle.
That's a big concern.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my biggest concern.
Okay, so if that happens, the grid is down, reactors going Roman candle, That means we are pretty much back in the Stone Age.
Yep.
Because there won't be any cell phones. There may be radio.
Yeah, I have shortwave radio, but
maybe some of that, but that will only last as long as the fuel lasts to run the generators.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, here's the funny thing, Kevin. It's going to be a tragedy for Western civilization. It's going to be a tragedy for Americans. Is it going to be a tragedy for the Mayan? No, and I'll tell you why. Because they already live basically a sustenance lifestyle. And I say lifestyle, I mean, you know, most of them are farmers. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the people that I met in Guatemala, the elders and stuff like that, you know, they had a couple of cattle or they had a little plot of land, and I mean little, and they grew flowers and they sold them to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Most of the villages when I stayed at, I mean, there was you were lucky if you had running water.
Mm-hmm.
And that water might be just a bucket on top of a roof, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was no hot water.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as hot water. If they told you if they told you they had hot water, they were lying to you. It was lukewarm water.
Well, I've lived this way, and it's not. Listen, do I prefer air conditioning? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Do I have to have it? No, I don't. And you can learn to make yourself comfortable somewhat in any circumstances.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are not going to be able to do that, Bill. A lot of people, if they can't text their BFF 24 hours a day, they go nuts, you know.
It's even more than that. I mean, we're just not mentally capable, although we'll see, obviously, if these things come to pass, we're going to see, you know, how we do real quick. But the bottom line is that, you know, most of the world's indigenous populations, and the Mayans I would include in that, right, Native Americans, they're already living, you know, sort of a sustenance lifestyle. So, and a lot of them still know all the old ways. They know how to grow corn. They know how to grow their own food. They're still growing it, you know, in a lot of places. And so, you know, the impact to them is not going to be anywhere near as bad as it's going to be to guys like you and me who depend on, you know, refrigerators and all of this stuff. When we were down there, no one had a refrigerator. You were lucky if you had electricity, and that usually came from a generator. So, I mean,
it's not going to bother me. I have lived like that for extended periods of time. I went 2 years without anything cold to drink. Because there was no electricity, so there was no refrigerator, there was no radio, there was no television, there was not a fan to turn on, much less air conditioning. And running water, once in a while. So it was, I can do that. That's not a problem. But lots of people can't. Now, I prefer not to. You know, but at that point, we're not talking about what we prefer. We're talking about survival.
And we're not even, and that's not even, I mean, God, you know, we can get into all kinds of crazy things. But, you know, I think the biggest thing, if anyone could take away from this, is just the idea that just be aware of it. You know what I mean? Just be aware that this is a possibility. Be aware that this is what these guys are probably talking about. I don't know what specifically is going to cause the 60 to 70 hours of darkness. They didn't really allude to that, but obviously everything is geared towards the conjunction with the the dark rift, which they call Ixababa, and they have a whole bunch of, you know, prophecies, individual prophecies that are related to Ixababa and the passing and what happened last time. But I really truly believe that these quote-unquote prophecies that everyone talks about, whether they're the Bible prophecies or the Kali Yuga prophecies or the Mayan prophecies, what these really are just stories and recollections and memories of past events that happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically telling us these stories so that we'll remember them for the future. And here's the interesting thing, and I know that this is, and I truly believe this to be true in my heart, is that the Mayans said, you know, Don Alejandro said that the Pleiades, the people from the Pleiades came down and founded the Maya in Central America, the Atlanteans actually. And that civilization was kind of destroyed, and that used to be in the Bahamas. and they got spread out into Guatemala, and all the survivors went up, and some of the Atlantean survivor royal family became the Cherokee Nation, and some became the Lakota, and some became the Hopi, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why you have the similarity between all of their calendars. They're all based on a 13 or a 20-day system. So the Pleiadians came down and founded the Mayan civilization, then the Don Alejandro said, well, then they went back up into space, you know, to where they came from in the Pleiades or the spaceships or whatever it was. And then they came back down and they founded the Egyptian civilization, and they were called the Karamaya. And then they went back up into space, and they came back down, and they founded the civilization in Angkor Wat. And they were called I forget what they called them, something Maya. Then they went back up, and they came down, and they founded a civilization in India, and they were called the Nagamaya. And you went through this whole list of these seven different, you know, Maya civilizations, and sure enough, these Maya, quote-unquote, you know, whatever you want to call them, did exist in these places, and they were called Nagamaya and Karamaya and all this. Amazing thing, when I was down there doing the ceremonies, I'm looking at the headgear of the elders with the multiple colors, and it sort of looks like the Egyptian headgear. And then it dawned on me that that's exactly what they were saying, that the Egyptians got their stuff from the Atlanteans, who in turn got it from the Pleiadians. And the Mayans are the descendants of the Atlanteans, who are in turn descendants of the Pleiadians.
So, and so this is the story the Mayan tell about their own origins, right?
Word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Directly from Don Alejandro. It's on the internet, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on shifttotheages.com. He's talking to one of the Inca elders. And actually, one of the Inca elders had traveled up for the Huaxitun ceremony. And, you know, it's just the amount of information is just, it can't be so overwhelming. I think the biggest message, and even he said this, was that, you know, don't be afraid. Think of, you know, the 3 days of darkness as a new day. You know, if we get through that, then think of it like a new day. You know, and that's really what it is. And they look at it like a New Year's Day, whereas we're being told to think of it as like the end of the world. And yeah, sure, there's going to be problems, but I think we as a species, you know, we have to get through it. We don't have a choice. It's not like we have a choice.
Well, it's not the end of the world, and that's the important thing. It's not going, whatever's coming, it's not the end of the world.
Absolutely, right.
Now, if today you die, that's the end of the world for you.
Well,
you see, and so if during the process of going through this cycle, you are one of the people who died, then for you it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
But it isn't the end of the world for the world. It continues. Life continues. Things change. It's a shift. And things change. And there is a possibility that we could be back in the days that we sort of refer to as, you know, the Stone Age. We could, with no mechanized industry, and no means of doing that, it's possible that we could be back there. And that's why, and it shouldn't be scary for anybody, that's why you need to be prepared to survive. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, telephone lines are open.
Virginia, and you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest, William Warwick IV. So, William, what we can take away from the Mayan elders... Oh, by the way, the phone lines are open, folks. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Now, if you have a question for William, or you have a comment, maybe you have information that corroborates his, or maybe you have information different from his, It's a talk show, folks. Get your fingers limbered up. Get off your butt and call 623-444-5889. Oops, you just insulted your audience. Only if you're just sitting there as a mushroom. Then if it insulted you, it was supposed to. 623-444-5889. And we have a flash message, William, from Puerto Rico. We're going to get to that right after the telephone call. This person may tell me I insulted them, but I hope not. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia, and if you wanted to insult me, you're going to have to try a little harder than that.
Well, Steve, it couldn't possibly insult you because you're not a mushroom.
Okay. Well, anyway, what I wanted to mention is, you know, well, there certainly is a whole lot of energy out there right now, and more on the way, no question about it. There is so doggone much energy in the air, and it's not just reflected in the temperature, but the curious level of intensity. It's just so intense out there right now,
mm-hmm.
And anybody who's even a little bit awake can attest to it. The thing is, this energy, and I agree, it's coming from the sun, no question about that, and maybe by way of the galactic center, and I, by the way, personally subscribe to Paul LaViolette's system of subquantum kinetics. Therefore, I don't believe in black holes. I have a whole different set of physics that I think about. And but the thing is, this energy is so discrete and so so intense that it's going to light up everything. It's doing it now. And when it gets even more intense, it's going to light it up on a molecular level, on a genetic level. It's going to light everything up on an atomic level, you know, because that's what we're made of. We're made of positive, negative, and neutral electric charges, you know. And these 3D holograms that we mentally agree to identify with as ourselves, you know. I mean, I have a body, you have a body. However, I don't identify that I am this body. This body is a vehicle. Who I am is something much deeper, richer, and at a much higher vibratory level than the physicality, you know, the physical nature. Therefore, this energy that's coming through is going to affect every single atom, not just of you and me, but of the entire planet, all the way down to the core. And it's going to be an opportunity for all these particles to raise their discrete energy signature. That's how Dr. Courtney Brown phrases it, and I agree with that phraseology. It's going to
okay. So, but what does that mean, Steve? What does that mean for living holograms on this planet?
Well, I think what that means is. We will find ourselves in our own identity at a kind of a crisis point. You know, for those of us who are able to shift our identity away from our bodies, you know, like the body is the light bulb, the consciousness is the light. You know, what do you identify with? The light bulb? Are you the light bulb? Or are you the light? Well, I think I'm the light. I am the light. For those who identify with the light bulb, identification has a way of adhering us to whatever we identify with.
Okay.
And what you identify with controls you. And for people who are just locked into their body, their physical self, if that's what their identification is, they're going to have a hard time. You know, I think it's going to be a very traumatic event for those people. You know, I think all the end time horrors that we read about in various prophecies, not just the Bible, but many other things, I think that's going to be a reality for a lot of people.
Okay, so now let me ask you a question. A gigantic solar flare happens. A huge solar flare, bigger than any that we've ever known about in recorded history. And it gets down on the deck right here on Earth. Now, are you saying that people who identify with their body will be burned up by such an event, and people who don't won't be affected by it?
No, that's not what I'm saying, Kevin. I'm saying that if it's like that, if a big old tongue of flame leaps out from the sun, we're all going to be crispy critters. At least our 3D hologram will be a crispy critter, mm-hmm. you know, and so will the rest of the planet, for that matter. Mm-hmm. You know, the point is...
Okay, hang on. William, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, if I could just interject 1 second, because yeah. This actually kind of ties in with what some of the Hopi and some of the Mayans said. One of the tail ends of what Don Alejandro had said actually was that they talk about a new sun. Now he's mentioned something very specifically. He said that when we come out of this 3-day period of darkness, he said we will enter a new sun period, what they call a new sun, and he was very specific because he said, but we don't know if that's going to be the same sun that we left with before the darkness, or if it will be a new sun, a new soul. New soul, I forget how he says it. He says it in Spanish. So it's an interesting thing what your caller is talking about, because it could be an indication, and I actually recall an interview with an Incan leader who talks about 3D and 4D realities, actually. And it seems crazy, however, if you think about the idea of the Big Bang Theory and expanding the universe, it would make sense that we would grow in dimensions as we grew with our vibrational frequency. So if what this gentleman is talking about, which is basically sort of what the Mayans are talking about, which is a galactic synchronization, where not the idea that the Earth or that we as individuals will be burned up by the actual solar flares or the events that are going to occur, the freezing or whatever's going to happen, right? But what he's actually talking about is that there would be an actual increase in the energy on an atomic level that would make each of us in our own way, you know, go in certain paths and down certain, you know, based on our proclivities, you know, our individual thinking today. So the idea is that we're in a 3D frame of mode today, but that when we go through this particular period of the 3 days of darkness, where we're doing this supermagnetic sort of block wall situation, where we're going to have a choice, I guess, and I've heard this talked about many times, but then by the Native Americans and such, that we're going to have to make a choice. You know, we will have a choice. You know, continue on doing what we were doing before, or to, you know, go into the new world and do what we're going to do. And I think that the way that they may possibly unfold in a scientific explanation way is that if we're in a supermagnetic flux point, so to speak, where we're neither here nor there, so to speak, in the time-space continuum, whatever it may be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though it may only seem like 3 days to us, there could be all kinds of different things going on with the space-time continuum that we're not aware of, because we're experiencing at the speed of light. Even though it may not be happening at the speed of light because of Einstein's theory of relativity. So, having said that, we may not, you know, we just may not understand what's going to happen. And the people that are more prepared for it and more sort of okay with it and can say to themselves, okay, we're going to ride this out, you know, I know what's happening, this has happened before, you know, I can go back to, you know, in your mind, you know what I'm saying, you're prepared for it in your mind. Whereas I hope you have a prophecy that what's going to happen is going to be so cataclysmic that people will actually just have heart attacks and just die flat on the spot because they just won't be able to deal.
Well, that's what it says in the Bible.
Yeah, you know.
Men's hearts failing them for fear.
We haven't even started to talk about the idea or some of the prophecies which talk about the return of Kukulkan or, you know, the Pleiadians returning back to Earth, which is possibly part of this whole thing. You know,
okay.
That these things would be going on simultaneously, and this comes into the messianic, you know, sort of idea of the return of Jesus or Mahdi or you know, every religion has its own particular savior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Figure.
So I don't understand how having a choice, and this is for both Steve and William.
Yeah.
Okay. A solar flare gets on deck with us, and you got a choice?
Well,
I think at that point you grab your ankles and kiss your ass goodbye.
Well, let me... Can I interject, Kevin?
Okay.
I think you're making your choice now. I think you've been making your choice all your life.
Okay.
I think the road that people set their feet upon, you know, and it's like Led Zeppelin said, it's never too late to change the road you're on. I think people make their choices as they live their lives, you know, and where they choose to place their focus. And when this thing comes, if it's unexpected, it's no big deal because you've already made your choice. People are out there, they've already made their choices. You know, people who are more predatory and self-centered and selfish, those people are making a choice. That choice has already been made, and when it occurs, it's going to be too late to change their mind. And for people who are into a more expansive consciousness, and they understand that their presence does make a difference, and it's therefore their responsibility to radiate light into any situation that they can, any situation you find yourself in, you've got to somehow contribute light to it, not darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't make the room better by leaving, make the room better by coming in. You know, if people who choose that as a way of life every day, they've made their choice. So when this thing comes, you know, you're gonna step up, you know, and you're gonna move to a higher level of vibration. And those other folks, in particular, I'm addressing the elite right now, who think somehow that by getting into these big old tunnels that they're gonna save themselves, like there's any salvation for them. They are deceived, you know, and I pity them. Well, I don't really pity them. They've got it coming. But they're deceived, and that's choice. As far as that's what choice means to me, Kevin. It's not what's time to choose now. No, it was time to choose 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or maybe right now. You know, it's time for people to make a choice as to what they're going to bring to every moment of their lives.
Well,
all right.
I would have to agree with that 100%. In fact, that's what Princess Nakamura was talking about, was that you had all these elite super bunkers being built, and we know they're being built. You can Google them. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. a big mystery. You know, there's one huge one under the Denver airport. You know, the question has always been, you know, what is the reason? And it used to be, you know, we thought, it was the Cold War, but they're still building this at a massive scale and at a massive rate. And I'm not an expert with any of these super elites. Princess Nakamura, I assume, would be, and she said flatly, point blank, that this is in fact what's going on, just like the caller was talking about. And I would say, you know, if they were truly going to try to do that, then they're really talking about becoming a separate species, because at that point in time, they're becoming separate from the species that they're supposed to be helping and protecting. You know, because if they know that these things are going to happen, then they should be telling us, so that the rest of society can be prepared for it, and they're clearly not going to do that, you know, which is sad.
Well, I think because when they go down the bunker,
yeah.
When they get down there, just after we survive this thing, we all ought to get out there and fill that hole full of concrete. We have to step away for a break. Steve, thanks for the call. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, William Warrick. And William, we have a caller on hold, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, William.
How you doing, Rusty?
Good. Do the elders say that there may be a time when the Earth may not exist?
That never came up. In fact, they have numbers in their calendar system that go backwards and forwards for, octillion years? So, you know, they have biloctone cycles that are billions and billions of years. So clearly, they are actually more Buddhist in their beliefs. They believe that when we die, we don't go to the stars, we're actually reincarnated. Our spirit is reincarnated in our children or in other people's children or what have you. It's actually a Buddhist philosophy, if that's the closest thing I can equate to what they believe. So I don't think that there's anything I've ever heard of that would say that they say the Earth is going to be destroyed on such and such a date, even though we know cosmologically, you know, at some point the Earth will be, you know, destroyed when the sun goes supernova or whatever it's going to do, you know what I mean? So, yeah. But I haven't heard of anything like that. They may have something, but I've never heard of it.
You know, you've been talking about some things, you know, some changes that may happen. What exactly do they see that we are going to turn into? Just this vague thing of more lightened? That's it? They don't say specific?
Turn into...
You talked about how our vibrational level raises and, you know, those...
Oh, well, actually, that was a conversation between Don Alejandro and one of the Incan elders. Where they were talking about, the Incan elder was talking about how he was in contact with tribes in the Amazon, shamans, and some of these shamans in turn were, I guess, in what they called the enchanted cities, which were fourth dimensional or other dimensional cities that existed but in another dimension. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, honestly...
Yeah, but so what happens to us? What do we turn into?
I guess we become them if we're enlightened enough or if we're at the right vibrational level. Now, here's the funny thing we have to understand, everyone. When we're talking about vibrational levels, we can actually measure these vibrations. So, you know, if you look at like an EKG or you look at brainwave patterns, for instance, okay, we can classify those, you know, alpha, beta, you know, theta, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the idea that we would be, quote-unquote, at a higher vibrational level, what does that basically mean? Well, I think what that means is that spiritually we are open to the universe, or we are in touch with the universe, as opposed to being materialistic and Western and completely focused on, like you said, you know, the iPhone thing or my Twitter thing, or completely unaware of and unattached to the natural world around us. So I think and some people, some sociologists would say we're becoming there's a split becoming between homo pacifist and, what do they use the word term, homo, was a word they use for warfare. But we're basically, you know, we have to make a choice between, are we going to become a peaceful civilization that works together for the common good of all people, or are we going to become this predatory sort of time machine, you know, underground Morlock people, you know, who eat the people above, and, you know what I mean, this sort of crazy sort of species. And I think that's the whole idea of the Bakhtun cycle is really what the end of the Bakhtun cycle really is the culmination of, you know, 5,000 years of evolutionary history, where... Yeah,
it's basically the galaxy flushing the toilet.
Yeah. And it's just like, think of it like this in nature, you know, in order for the snake to, you know, or a lot of species, I'll just use the snake as an example, and I think it's the reason why you see it over and over and over and over in the native mythology, is that it has to shed its skin in order to grow the new skin, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the molt.
Yeah.
And I think we have to go through the Hopi call it the Great Purification, for instance, this mm-hmm. period that we're about to go through. And that's a excellent description of it. It's a purification of all of the bad things that we have inherited through the inability of ourselves to grow up as a species. We're like teenagers. We're rebellious teenagers. We talk back to each other. We fight all the time. And eventually, I think the species in general has to grow up. And that's what the end of the old cycle is all about, and the beginning of the new cycle, the new sun, as they call it.
Okay, we have to move on to another call. Very quickly, let me read a flash message from Puerto Rico from Leonardo. Kevin, the rainbow is the reminder from God that the world would be destroyed by fire and not water. Man, another good show tonight. Okay, Leonardo, thanks for the flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, this is Gary from Nebraska.
Hello, Gary.
And Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong. I think we have an early warning system if the event's really going to happen, we'll know it when Washington and other capitals are vacated. What do you think?
Yeah, when they get vacated, you can pretty much, I think at that point, you can pretty much expect in the next 8 minutes the lights go out.
Well, I think it's going to take more than 8 minutes to leave Washington, so I'm thinking, you know, it might be 2-3 days, even a week.
You know, they can get into their tunnels without ever leaving their buildings.
Well, if they're at home, or if they're on the seaside shore, or, you know, might not happen quite that quick.
Yeah, it might not. It may be some of the rats don't make it to the hole, maybe.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for an excellent show.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right, we have a flash message from Mark in Australia, and this is a good one for us to end with. We have a couple of minutes here for us to read this and for you to respond. Mark in Australia says, I'm sorry, not Australia, it's Austria. My apologies. Mark in Austria, he says, this sounds pretty much the same as the story we've already heard that you referred to as a myth. So how is this different from the mythology of the Mayan prophecy?
Well, I think the focus has always been on the end date as being the date that all, whatever's going to happen, the bad things that are going to happen, that's the date that it's going to happen. The reality is that we're probably going to still have bad things happen, but no one knows the date. You know, mm-hmm. The only thing that we do know, or that we can be fairly certain of, is that it will be related to the conjunction that will happen around December 21st. Now, we don't know if that December 21st conjunction is going to be the 2012 one or the one that happens in 2048. That was...
Well, let me tell you my opinion, and this is based on some logic, but it's only mine. Okay, it's totally mine. All of these ancient texts talk about this being the end of an age, not the end of the world.
Correct.
And if it's the end of an age, it's the beginning of an age.
Yep.
Okay. So if it's the end of an age, it's an end of an age of all this destruction, and it's the beginning of the age of recovery.
That's pretty much what the prophecies are really all about.
So, December 21, 2012, if that is the end of this Baktun, if that is the end of the age, then at that point we begin to recover. That means we've got some really rocky stuff to happen between now and then. But make it to December 22nd and it begins to dawn. Stay on the line with me for a moment, and ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to land the starship for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.